Hi everyone, my name is Eugenia Chow and I run the Instagram account Ugreenia. The Everyday Activist podcast is founded under the belief that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to activism and anyone can get involved. Isaias, also known as Queer Brown Vegan on Instagram, is an eco-educator based in California. He creates accessible, educational, environmental content with a focus on veganism, zero waste, and environmental justice. Having experienced environmental injustice in his community growing up, he hopes to cultivate an inclusive community where people can learn while unlearning at the same time. In this episode, we talk about the importance of intersectionality in the environmental movement, toxic masculinity, individual versus collective action, social media as a tool for activism, and advice for people wanting to get more involved in the sustainability movement. I had so much fun talking to Isaias, and I can't wait for you to listen in on the first episode of this podcast. Hi, Isaias, and welcome to the first episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. It's such an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much again for inviting me. I'm so happy to be on here.
So to kick things off, could you tell us a bit about your background, how you got involved with environmental activism, and what's your environmental narrative?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so my name is Isaias Hernandez, and I'm originally from Los Angeles, California. I grew up having a very different side of environmentalism growing up, especially because I come from a first generation Mexican family. We grew up here low income, and you know, for myself, like growing up, like we were always into reusing a lot of things. At a young age, I like recycled cans in the neighborhood and collected for extra cash with my family, of course. And it was for us a very difficult time growing up. I think that my access and understanding to green spaces and relationships with them were very different. In a sense of environmentalism today for me was mainly about survival. And I think, you know, in my area, we realized that there was a lot of injustices happening, especially with like air pollution and noise pollution. And I think that, you know, at a young age, you don't really know how to extrapolate this or really understand that it has long-term effects, because environmental racism is like that. It kills you slowly, not, you know, in the instant. So I think for me growing up, I realized that as soon as I had a passion for the environment in middle school and late elementary, I started looking into programs that would offer environmental education at a young age, and I didn't really find them as much, or, you know, they're a bit far away, and slash we didn't really have access to cars. My dad was the only one who actually drove in the house, so it was pretty much hard taking, you know, public transportation to these events or going to things that would be offered in the weekends for youth or during the late school evening. And I think for me, once I got into high school, I realized that I knew how to talk about my environmental narrative, but I didn't really know how to really fully extrapolate it or use the academic language, which then brought me to like pursuing an environmental science major at UC Berkeley, which was, you know, an amazing 4 years of undergraduate program, of course, that I did environmental science. And it really challenged me in different views of how biological, physical, and social processes are very interconnected with each other. And I think had I not, you know, really learned this in my undergrad, I don't think I'd be able to really use this language to make it become accessible for others, because I think throughout college when I first started, I had to do a lot of homework, and the way academia silos itself from, you know, individual learning or terminology that's used in your own community, it's way different.
Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if there was any specific turning point in your childhood that clicked for you and you were like, yes, this is where I belong, this is what I have to be doing, and environmental activism is something that you wanted to get more involved with?
Yeah, I think for me at a young age, I remember my mom would never let my brother and sister and I go outside to play because she said it was contaminated and like it smelled bad outside. So she just always was advocating that, you know, we always stay inside and find some ways. And I think for me, when I talked to my neighbor next door and I said, like, why can't we go outside? She was a year older than me, and she had told me, like, you know, my mom said that, like, the environment's bad for us. And I think for me, that kind of spurred some curiosity of, like, what do you mean it's bad? Like, I don't see anything physically bad. Like, there's no one mean trying to hurt me. And she said, no, it's the air, the thing that we breathe. And it hurts us. And I think that made me kind of question, like, what are you talking about? And this is like, I think 8 or 9 year old me. So I was like very confused, like, wait, what? Like the air is not killing me, I'm alive. So I think that was the turning point that I realized that, like, okay, like there's something wrong. But I think that, like, it was until high school, the moment when I realized, like, when I went to an environmental science program during the summer, is the lack of diversity that was in that program. And also the fact that, you know, I was the only brown person there. And I realized that none of these kids had environmental experiences as me, that I realized, like, okay, I need to do this. I don't know why, but I feel that, like, this is, it's just so weird that there's no diversity here. And also there's an issue that certain people are only talking about conservation issues, when literally my own neighborhood's like being harmed and people are dying from illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a very defining feature of your Instagram account and your website is the fact that you're queer and you're brown. And I think your, like, intersectional identity plays an important role in your work. Could you talk a bit more about this identity and how it's significant in the environmental movement?
Yeah, definitely. I think with the queer side myself, you know, I had such a hard time realizing who I was at a younger age. I think that, you know, growing up with a, you know, quote unquote, you know, homophobic family that wasn't really accepting, or, you know, you would say comments about the queer community, was really hard for me. I had really great support from my brother and sister, of course. And, you know, I think for me, I realized that, you know, after high school, I came out because I felt comfortable for who I was. But I think that what really spurred me the interest in the environmental movement is college, when I was in a class and I saw that, one, that obviously there was no diversity whatsoever, but two, the fact that all these people were straight. And I realized, like, okay, is there something wrong with me, or is there something wrong with, like, what's happening? And then soon I realized that, like, a lot of the queer traditions and practices in ecology, or terms that were coined by, or, you know, done by Indigenous, Black Indigenous people of color, were, a lot of them were queer. And I think that, like, that's something that, you know, I really didn't really realize. And I challenged myself in academia of, like, how I was looking at nature and natural, right? I think that, like, when we look at species and animals, like, you know, there's obviously fluidity in, you know, animal species, and that's not talked about, or in polyamorous relationships. And I think for me, like, I realized too that, like, we live in such a heteronormative society that it has ingrained us in this binary code of, like, this is what it is, you're either male or female, and you have to, like, a male has to like a female, and a female needs to like a male. And I was, like, so ingrained in that, like, toxicity, that I failed to realize that there's so many beautiful queer ancestors out there that have been actually doing these practices. But because of Western colonization and all these ideals in the West, it's kind of attempted to erase these ideals. So me, myself, fighting that really put me in peace, but also advocated the fact that, you know, no one should ever feel ashamed for who you are, right? Especially your identity. And that's something that I didn't want to apologize or feel ashamed for, being this queer environmentalist. And I think for me, the vegan part, the second part that I mentioned, is that I think for me, I had always had a sister that was vegan for more, almost 20 years now. And basically, she'd always encouraged me to really adopt these, like, plant-based lifestyles, and told me about the animal agricultural fields and the systems that are so messed up. And I think it wasn't until my last year, senior year of college, that I was kind of fully vegetarian. But I think that, like, it took me time to go vegan for a few months, only because I took it slow. But also I realized that as soon as I went vegan myself and I started discussing more and doing more research, I found the links that animal agricultural systems that are unsustainable, of course, are linked to monoculture and are linked to environmental colonialism, which is then, you know, makes you realize the fact that, you know, what we're being told at this young, early age is never talked about. And I realized then that, like, a lot of these agricultural fields are not only, you know, causing environmental injustice for our migrant farm workers, but also the people are nearby in those local communities that are experiencing environmental racism through the air quality and the waterways that are being contaminated. So I think for me, that really was the last steering point for me to be like, I really cannot, you know, myself, live this way, knowing that I myself have the individual collective power to talk about it, but to the fact that, like, you know, a lot of people like to say, quote unquote, the terminology food desert, which is something I recently unlearned. And I think for me, like, you know, I wasn't someone, now that I was out of college living in Oakland with friends, like, you know, a grocery store was down the street from me. I have access to fresh fruit. I had income. Like, there is no such thing for me to be like, oh, well, I don't really know what to do. It's more like, okay, I, you know, told myself, like, you can do it, and there's a lot of healthy ways to do it. But I think everyone, I realize that everyone should have the right to know where their food comes from. It's then up to the individual themselves to take action or initiative, whether or not they want to continue in eating meat or not.
Yeah, I feel like it's so important that you have become a voice in the environmental scene, especially on social media, because personally, I probably know about one or two vegans that are male. I remember seeing one of your posts on toxic masculinity and how people always call it gay for guys to care about the environment or just care about anything in general. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if you've noticed a shift in sort of this mindset over time and what you would suggest to people who are trying to sort of confront this toxic masculinity and how you can address this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I would love to add first about that vegan comment. Like, yeah, there's not many of us out there doing this type of environmentalism. A lot of the vegan people too, like, that I follow only talk about food, which is great, of course. Like, that's awesome. But some of them, like, don't really talk about other topics, which makes me very obviously concerned that, like, you know, veganism itself won't save the environment mm-hmm. entirely. It's a solution towards addressing the broken, or not broken, but this system that was designed never for us. So I think, yeah, that's a really great point that you added. I think, what was the last question you asked about the toxic masculinity, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to ask if you've noticed that there's any kind of shift in how people respond to these issues and how you would suggest people approach it.
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, this, you know, growing up too in high school before I obviously was out, like, a lot of kids, a lot of the guys I would hang out with would be like, haha, that's gay. And it's just something that you just wonder, like, that's extremely, like, homophobic, and too, like, that's so problematic to say, like, why are you saying that? And the people I've actually challenged in life, you know, are usually these people that don't really have any logical reasoning, right? You ask them, like, why is it? And then they're just like, and I'm like, so you don't care about the environment? Like, you don't care about your family? And when you start asking questions that are obviously meaningful or connected to them, of course you're gonna catch them and saying, like, oh wow, I shouldn't have said that. Because why? Because of course they care for their family, of course they care for their mom, or of course they care about their girlfriend or daughter, or, you know, whoever they're with. And I think that, like, you know, this shift has definitely addressed the problematic statement of that's gay. But I think that too, like, men, myself too, as a cis, you know, queer man, is that the fact that at a young age, we're not really taught the different forms of energies that are out there. And, you know, I think you've heard of this thing where it's like masculine, feminine energy, where one, obviously, it doesn't relate to, you know, masculine doesn't mean you're a male, mm-hmm. feminine doesn't mean you're a female, right? I think, of course, there's that society has gendered it, of course, which also has made it problematic, but we're not taught at a young age to really own our energies, right? Like, we're ingrained in the society that shows us cartoons where usually it's the male characters who are leading the shows, the ones who are silencing women, you know, there's less female representation in these Nickelodeon or cartoon shows, whatever, they're out there. And, you know, I think that, like, it really made me concerned that, you know, why is this the thing? But two, you know, the fact that, like, school itself at a young age, like, tells you and genders you immediately. It tells you, like, how you should be acting, how boys should be acting, how girls should be acting. You just ask yourself, like, why do we teach this? Because of what has happened in colonization has really taught us this, to, like, not respect ourselves and disrespect others, right? And I think that, you know, I would hope that, like, myself, like, seeing my follower accounts, you know, of course it's still a concerning issue for me, because the demographics, of course, on statistics, there's not that many males who follow me, actually, to be quite frank, and the ones who do are usually queer. So there are only a couple, you know, dads out there that follow me, of course, but, like, none of them have ever engaged with my content, and it makes me concerned, of course, the fact that, like, even myself being a male, like, you know, why isn't there any ownership over this? And I think it goes back to the fact that, like, men themselves perpetuate this toxic masculinity behavior where, you know, they can't accept themselves as wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, like, obviously is something that needs to be dealt with. But I think myself too, I also too share that privilege and need to address that, and also have had to unlearn a lot of things, which is something that, like, I think too, that not all males want to do that work, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Because I've noticed that you have managed to build a very inclusive community on your social media platforms, and you're not so much of the type to, I guess, angrily address things, which I think is very respectable. So I was just wondering how you usually approach this in real life. For example, if someone were to display toxic tendencies or say something that, I guess, is disrespectful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, like, anything that's, like, of course, like, any, like, homophobic, transphobic, like, biphobic, of course, like, you know, like, any type of discrimination that happens, of course, I usually question the person immediately in a very slowly way, where I start to question their thoughts and start to pick at their head and try to explain and try to understand their reasoning at first, and then to playing a mental game with themselves. You know, it's really interesting as soon as you turn around the table with them, because a lot of the times, most of the time, some males get angry, right? That's right off the bat, and they walk away or just call you something, you know, idiotically. But I think too, the fact that, like, my energy itself has been preserved, right? I think I'm able to enter certain spaces and really establish myself in this veil of protection, right? Where, you know, I have, of course, come with non-judgmental views, and something that I wanted to learn and unlearn in spaces. But also to the fact that, you know, I tell people, or men, you know, that I've confronted, like, you know, once I question them, a lot of the men who are my friends that have said certain behaviors, I've checked in with them and I've called them in for it. And I think they're willing to unlearn that and, you know, be better persons for themselves and their family or loved ones. But I think that most of the time when it comes to certain situations like that, I may not know someone, I am very careful in the way I speak to them, because I don't know how they would perceive me, or if they would want to either harm or attack me. It's something that, it's like that phrase of, like, choose your battles. But of course, too, like, I'm not going to scream at someone directly. If I see it, I will call them in immediately in a very soft or whatever tone I need to do. But I think that, you know, of course, that's when I expect other males who are usually in those circles to really step up and be like, hey, this is, like, really messed up. Like, why are you saying this?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever received any backlash for being too, I guess, like, controversial, or people think you're too radical in the work that you do?
I have gotten a few things, like, view statements from people are like, what does it, like, why does it matter if you're queer and an environmentalist? Like, we're all just people in this planet. Like, we need to live together. And this is actually a white male person, vegan person, who had a big following. I think around 20 to 30K followers. And this was a few months ago, and I had less than 1,000 actually. And they had commented that on a post that my friend had shared about me. And I responded, and I was like, you know, it does matter. And second of all, this is not the environmental movement is predominantly white in the 1960s. And I explain all this historical analysis. And this person, obviously, like, my community that saw this post, they came after this person. Like, a lot of them were trolls. A lot of them said, like, you're just a clown. And they put the clown emoji, which is, like, pretty funny. I, like, started laughing. But I think for me, like, I had to address this. I was like, you don't get to say this type of stuff to me, or not even directly to me. If you want to be a quote unquote male or whatever, say things straight up, like, you know, it's just like, you know, address what you want. And two, the fact that you feel so threatened by this random vegan that has less than 1,000 followers during that time, like, why, what did it make you so concerned? So then for me, it's like, makes me think, like, what, like, is that really something that you're so concerned about? And I think that this person obviously instantly blocked me. But, you know, I think in that instance, it's just like, you know, some people will choose or pick your battles. But I think eventually, what I would hope is that the vegan movement itself too recognizes that it's very whitewashed and greenwashed heavily. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of the people who I do follow in the vegan community are usually people of color, Black and Jewish people of color.
Because you were talking about how even, what, like, a month ago, you only had 1,000 followers, and now you're at 7,000 followers.
Yeah.
And it's just really inspiring to see how quickly your platform has grown. I was just wondering if you ever I guess, suffer from burnout just because you're constantly posting, you're constantly engaging with these issues. And yeah, just what keeps you motivated?
Yeah, I think for me, it's so hard, right? Because I have so many friends, and I think myself too can agree on this, and yourself too, is that the fact that it can be very draining and negative having social media, right? Like constantly looking at things, constantly reading things, constantly thinking about what you want to write.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's extremely negative. And I feel that, I really feel that sometimes, but I try to turn it in different ways, not to say like, oh my God, it's positive. But for me, before I created this page, I was at an airport and then a lot of people were just telling me like, you just need to create a page and talk about environmentalism. Like, people will love you, people will follow you, like we're telling you, and a lot of people have been telling me this in the last few years. So for me, it was like time for me to actually do it, right? I was like, fine, I'll just do it. But I think I realized for me, like one of the ways that I really wanted to become a better environmentalist for myself is that I had graduated and gotten this degree, right? And I thought, you know, I lied to myself as an undergrad saying like, oh my God, to be an environmentalist, you need a degree, which is so untrue. And I realized I had so much of this knowledge and I was like, why am I not sharing this and/or really brushing up on my environmental skills? And I was like, I did not go to 4 years of college to take 3 part-time jobs and work till 3 or 4 a.m. to lose this information. Like, I want to spread it. So I think for me, like, I saw it as a way to like not only improve my research skills, I also saw it as a way to improve my writing skills. Like, I write every day now. And you know how a lot of people say, like, the best way to improve in your literacy and your writing skills and speaking skills is by writing? And I think that, like, I didn't do that as much after I graduated. And once I started this page, like, wow, like, my writing has improved. And I've seen it in the last few months. Because the way people are like, wow, I relate to this. And it's like, it feels almost somewhat natural now when I write things out. But at the same time too, like you said, it is a bit concerning that the fact that like at the rate I'm growing at, more and more people are like, oh my God, I want to work with you. Like, let's do something. And I tell people like, you know, a lot of people sometimes think like, oh, like it must take you an hour to write your post. It actually takes me like 4 to 5 hours to research stuff, to write about it, to think about it, to draw it out, to like design it. It takes so much work, but then at the same time, I value it because I know that it's shareable and I know that people are willing to learn. But I also understand to myself, like, there will be a point where I'm going to be winding down because I want to be exploring other options and also hopefully go to grad school. But that doesn't mean that, like, I'm not going to do the page anymore. It just means that, like, I want to do a little bit less and less as I'm more, you know, involved in doing other projects.
Yeah, for sure. So are these terms all from completing your degree, or are you constantly finding new terms to talk about and share?
Yeah, so I think for me, before I created the account, I like looked at certain terms that I was like, okay, I need to talk about them. And those first ones that you've seen posted earlier when I first started my account in November or December are the first ones that that came in mind, obviously. But there was the one that I had already planned, and this is near like I think January, where those are the words I was using. And up until recently, there's been obviously new terms that I've been learning, new terms that people have been requesting. I'm currently working on a campaign with this org that like just provided me 10 environmental terms they want me to cover. They're providing resources with me. And it's such a great opportunity because I tell people always that like, I don't want anyone to really see myself as the face of environmental education being accessible, but more as like a resource or be like someone that wants to be willing to learn with others. Because I think too that like environmental terms are so complex to understand. And sometimes too, for me, I have such a hard time understanding certain things. Like, there've been some terminology that I've been introduced to and people are like, can you do it? And I look at it, I'm like, I just don't know how to come up with the way to write it, the words to speak about it, only because I don't have that much experience about that term. But also the fact that like, I just don't want to copy and paste it and be like, okay, I did it. Like, I hope it makes sense, when it didn't really make sense to me. So a lot of the words that I put out there, they make sense. Once I post them, it's because they make sense to me. But there are some I have on the log right now on my list that I'm working on. They just take so much time, but also I feel like it may be in controversy with certain communities, such as like white veganism, which is something that people have been telling me to define. But I just am like, I don't want to take the time right now to think about it. Slash, I already know that if I post it, there will be a lot of backlash on that term.
Mm-hmm. But I really love how creative you are with explaining terms and also just all the colors and the different formatting of the post. I noticed that you also started using TikTok to share different eco terms. I was wondering how that's been going for you and if there's a particular platform that you think works best or better for online activism.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, like, honestly, like, being an educator, like, I have put in a lot of course, value on Instagram. And I slowly, once I got my website up and started developing more things, I, like, got on Twitter and I got on Facebook, on Pinterest, on, you know, TikTok recently. And I've had very actually good, somewhat, I'm not going to say virality, right? Like, I never aim for virality. I aim for longevity. And I think that's something that a lot of people are always aiming for, right? A lot of people are like, I want to be the next big thing, which is great for them, right? Like, great goals for you. And I'm like, no hate. But virality is not as sustainable as you may think it is. Like, if you look at the data from the past, like, virality itself doesn't hold any longevity anymore, as it used to back in the 2000s, right? Like, you remember those old memes in the 2003 or 2000 or 2006 or 7 with, like, those old pictures from the 90s or the Goosebumps and stuff like that? Yeah, so, like, all those, like, old memes, like, are still remembered today, but if you look at old, like, newer memes, you look at them, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that, but I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
So, for TikTok, I recently started a few months. I started back in January. I posted one video, but it was experimenting, and I was experimenting back and forth these last few months. And of course, like, you know, I wasn't gaining that much traction. I was getting like 140. And it was only until recently that I found this, like, there's certain filters and certain, like, things that you can do on TikTok. Like, for me, I'm not a dancing person. I can dance, but I'm not like those people that are like, oh, I'm going to do this dancing about capitalism. No. For me, I was like, oh, I'm just going to, like, honestly, like, I have all these graphics on my phone that I usually email to myself. Like, why don't I just try to become an educator and try to practice this in the future when I want to become a teacher or a professor? Like, why don't I just do this as an opportunity? And I posted one about the environmental justice of the prison industry a few days ago, and it got attention. And I posted environmental racism a few days ago, and it got up to 7K views, and then more people started following me. So I'm slowly gaining traction on that. Of course, like, I went from, like, I think, like 40 followers to 360 now, but I do see it as a form of, like, other people to really learn from. And I think that, like, a lot of people should give it the options, right? Like, some people are good at Pinterest, some people are good at Twitter, and some people are good at really Instagram. And I think I value TikTok the same as Instagram, as the fact that, like, these are both, like, pipelines for me to really share this information, because now a lot of people are DMing on TikTok and they're like, wow, why weren't you on the TikTok community earlier? Like, we need you. I just saw your IG. Like, wow, you're so amazing on there. So there's, like, more conversations being spread. And I think I even suggest you too, like, I'm planning the future or next week or so, planning, like, an environmental TikTok beginner presentation on Zoom, which I'm working on right now. So I'm just hoping to really spread that information and just to really, like, provide, like, space for people to really get on there. Because a lot of people in the environmental movement are like, oh, I'm not interested in this platform because it's dumb, or like, oh, there's a lot of millennials.
Mm-hmm. Did your social media journey begin with your Instagram account, or did you have experience with it before, like social media marketing and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, definitely. So I was always interested in, I always did social media in college. So I ran the university's Instagram and their Snapchat and other digital campaigns. And then I worked at a creative agency for 2 years, actually, after my graduating. So for us, like, my creative agency was more revolved around fashion, like, products and, like, photographers, models, stylists. It was like a platform, and it's still alive today. And I think that really gained me the exposure of the creative industry and just really understanding how that works. Because I think for that perspective, there's a lot of design, there's a lot of art, there's a lot of creativity that's incorporated. But I think that's something that, like, you know, like, for me, like, it was never like taught in college. So, and the fact that I also had a creative eye in college, like, I always loved learning about creativeness. And I think that not a lot of people in the environmental movement were willing to, like, not willing to learn, but, like, I don't think they had the interest or the passion for, and I did. So I was like, I'm going to combine these two and, like, execute it. And I think because of that, it gave me more experience on the design process of how I wanted to establish the graphics.
I think I discovered one of the first posts I saw from you or like about you was related to Alluvia magazine.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. I forgot. Yes. No. Yeah. So I co-created it actually with my co-founder Zahra. She is so amazing. And we both founded it in the fact that we wanted to feature Black Indigenous people of color environmentalists doing creative work, intersecting with, of course, environmentalism and the creative arts. So that was really our first case. This was last year. So I ran the social media there too. And I was like very respondent and growing the account too during that time. And we were working on our first issue. And running a magazine is so, it's very hard. It's very, we did our first one. We ran a GoFundMe. We had a week to raise like $800 and we did it. We raised $900. It was amazing doing that. But I recently stepped down from the project because I realized I wanted to really focus on my brand page. But I think for me, I'm still like an assistant and like run or do the customer service emails on there and like host events with the team and still work with them closely. But I think that was really my gateway towards creating this, because especially with producing content it's really hard when obviously like you're interviewing people, you're getting people's stories, you have to design things. Like I wasn't a photographer, of course, so it takes time. Whereas like with my page, it's like the only one who talks about certain things is me, and like I get to plan out my content whenever. So I felt that was more flexible and more freedom in my sense of being able to decide the decision I wanted for my page. But with Alluvia, it was really amazing because we created this beautiful magazine and it was both our thoughts and creativeness together, and I was so happy about it. But I realized too, like, it was a bit draining for me to work on it knowing that I was working on another project too.
Yeah. So what do you think are three qualities that are most valuable in advocacy work?
Definitely. I think with advocacy work is the one thing I really value is versatility, right? I think a lot of times, a lot of people don't realize the fact that they're versatile in so many ways. And like the fact that like, you know, the quote unquote, what we think is creative is, you know, that's the second thing, creativity is that, you know, there's so many ways that you're creative, right? Let's say that you're interested in math or economics or policies, the ways that you're able to understand that, it's creativeness, right? And I think that like with advocacy, creativity and versatility are interchangeable and intertwined together, because the fact that these two work together to really create advocacy and action in ways of like, you know, forms of social media or direct action or forms of supporting, donating. And I think the third thing I really value is like just the genuinity of the person or the individual, right? I don't myself, like, you know, of course I always tell people like I'm not perfect. I've done a lot of things that of course I was like ashamed of in the past, or like I've unlearned and like I've had to move forward, of course. And I'm always looking to be a better person. But that's not to say like I want anyone to ever hold me to a pedestal or a very statue or a temple, right? I want people to just value me as a human being, and I want to value others the same thing.
Yeah, I think you definitely combine all of those values very well. But I do wonder, because as a vegan, but also as an environmentalist, I wonder if those two identities ever clash. For example, I know for me, because a lot of the reason why I'm vegan is because of the environment, but I find that sometimes if you want to buy pleather, for example, that uses a lot of plastic waste, but then you don't want to use leather because that's an animal product. So I wonder if you ever have those sort of dilemmas for yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it's really hard, right? I don't think one should feel ashamed if you go to a thrift store, right, and buy something that has leather. Unfortunately, like, it just happened that the product did, but that doesn't mean it reflects on you as an individual, right? These clothes are essentially going to be ending up in the landfills anyways, and such, or ruining, destroying local economies in the global south or in different countries. So I think that like if you like really realize that, like it is a hard thing. And I don't own anything that's in the sense like with fur, obviously, but I do have a belt that I bought over, I think, in like junior year of college, because mine broke from high school. So it's just, it sucks that, like, of course, that, like, you know, you can't always live your best values or your, what, quote unquote, you know, perfect values. And there is things that, like, of course, that, you know, the fact that you address it means something, because there's a lot of people who are always going to deny that or be like, well, I don't eat meat, so therefore I can do anything, right? At least the fact that we are taking these steps to really reflect and be like, it sucks, you know. I've used plastic, and I've told people, like, you know, I'm not completely zero waste. For me, zero waste has always meant to me is reducing and reusing, and creative a system of how you're able to reuse certain things. But of course, I still generate plastic because I consume certain vegan products too that have plastic in them, and it's infuriating. Of course, like, yes, I don't need to shop at it. Of course, that is so true. But at the same time, you know, zero waste itself has been changed, and veganism has been changed to kind of blame the consumer, to be like, you should feel ashamed, when it's literally the producer who has caused all these injustices, mm-hmm. and now are using thousands of dollars to use as ads to shame you.
Yeah, just so building on that, what do you think is, I guess, the role of individual action when it comes to demanding, like, greater systemic change?
Yeah, I think with individual action, it really starts off with, like, who you are, right? Like, what you're willing to sacrifice and who you're willing to set space for, right? I think a lot of times myself here in the West, honestly, the United States, is that, like, a lot of us have this individualistic mindset where it's like, I have to do this myself, or I have to save the world. And it's really, like, we need to unlearn that. I had to learn that too. It was a hard conversation with myself. It's the fact that, like, when you have individual power, it leads to collectivized action, right? And that means that, like, other people will share that common passion or interest with you, and they will stand for you, whether it be at a, you know, local, regional, or state level. They will be there, right? People will show up for you in different ways. And I think that there's, like, at the end of the day, right, the only time you owe is to yourself, right? So you have this beautiful life, this whole X amount of years that you're going to be living, to decide what you really want for yourself, right? Do you want to live a life where, you know, you just get to live in your la-la land and, like, don't really, you know, feel comfortable to talk about certain things, and you kind of want to talk about it, but you feel like people will judge you? At the end of the day, like, you're going to lose people. I've lost a lot of friends, and, you know, it sucks that it had to be this way, but at the same time, I realized, like, you know, I've grown from who I was in college. I'm constantly growing, and that's what I want to do. I don't never want to be the same person I was X amount of years ago, right? Or I don't want to be the same person I was last year, because there's a lot of tough conversations that we need to have. So I think with individual action, to me, looks like is starting from where you can start, and obviously recognizing where your physical and mental boundaries are at, because I think a lot of us sometimes, like, go over those boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions when it comes to veganism or climate advocacy in general?
Yeah, I think the biggest myth sometimes with, like, you know, and I think this is too perpetuated a lot in college, is activism, right? I think at one point I did label myself as an activist in college, because I was doing a lot of certain things that are activist work. I don't call myself an activist now, of course, because I'm more of an educator. But I think that, you know, a lot of the things that I've seen is that, like, the climate movement, environmental movement, people always constantly assume, like, oh my God, I need to march, or oh my God, I need to, like, sign this petition. It's like, no, there's so many ways in which you are probably already being an environmentalist, right? I think the fact that, like, we've lost that touch of ourselves to realize our own values and our own, you know, listings or things that we've done, right? A lot of the times these things are called environmental values, right? Like, things that, like, oh my God, you're caring about the earth, that's a value, right? But in reality, you probably always loved the earth and respected the earth, you respected animals, because that's what human beings do, right? Basic human rights. And I think that, like, when you are unaligned with those human rights, then you lose touch of yourself, right? But I think that, you know, reconnecting that with yourself is that the biggest myth is that, you know, you probably have already done environmental advocacy. You just never knew it. And, you know, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I think now society is kind of ingraining us, or, like, selling us this picture that you must be doing something constantly. But honestly, sometimes just existing and just, you know, being in your space can also be in its forms of advocacy, because you're taking care of your body, which is the temple, which is also connected to the environmental or the ecosystems in the earth we live today. So I think take care of your own roots before you obviously, like, are out there trying to fix other roots that are usually contaminated or harmed when you're the one who's also harmed too.
Uh-huh. I feel like you just hit the nail on the head just now with what you said about activism and how, I guess that's like the purpose of this podcast, explaining that you don't have to necessarily be doing, there's no like one size fits all for activism. Mm-hmm. And I think that what you're doing is very much like inspirational and it inspires other people to act. And I think that in itself is just as meaningful as going out to the streets and like marching and doing the more like conventional types of climate activism. So I'm just wondering, what do you think is, I guess, what is your vision for the future and where do you see yourselves maybe in 5 years and the kind of work that you'll be doing and what do you hope to see?
Yeah, I mean, I really hope, honestly, that I start seeing a more movement, especially more as we've seen that the youth are doing such an amazing job. It's actually funny. Someone on TikTok called me a Gen Zer, and I was like, I don't know. I mean, I'm a millennial slash Gen Zer because I was born 1996, but also I'm like, I'm kind of on the older side because a lot of people were like, oh my God, you're such a bright college student. I was like, I graduated like 2 years ago. So I'm an adult technically. I'm not like a youth or a student anymore. And it's funny because I think that, you know, for myself anyways, like I've always wanted to be holding space for people and hoping to inspire people in a certain way to really look into and activate themselves other than, you know, looking up to me and being like, oh my God, like, you know, because I feel like I learn so much when I look to someone and I tell them, like, tell me your story. Like, I really want to know who you are and like what your passions are, because when I talk down and sit down with so many people and so many youth or like older people and they tell me about what they want, what they're interested, I'm like, wow, like you just told me so many things that I didn't know that I think this needs to be talked about. And then people are like, wow, I didn't even know this. And like, thank you for letting me know. But I think in 5 years myself, I honestly see myself hopefully, you know, I don't want to ever say like, oh, I want to be big, but it would be nice to have a bigger platform, of course, where I'm able to really, you know, be a motivational speaker or some TEDx conference speaker and really do workshops and like plans about education, making that accessible. Of course, I know that takes time, but I know that, like, you know, with good faith and good heart and like collaborations with people, I know eventually like I will bloom. But I think for now, I'm so happy for like everything that's been happening. Like, I didn't ever think that I would grow this fast, honestly. Like, it just came about, and more and more the words I've wrote down and like spoke about, like more people are resonated about. And I think that like it really, for me, it really made me feel happy, the fact that, you know, I didn't want to live this life where I just wanted to work a full-time job at a marketing agency and just be so unfulfilled with my life and being like, wow, I don't really do anything. I'm not really passionate about doing marketing agency work. And this is, you know, my life for the next 40 X years of whatever X years amount of my life. And it's like, no, I want to actually work for myself. I love working remote. I don't really like working in the office. I remember at the agency, like we'd always have to go to the studio for shoots and I just hated going to there, because it's not the fact that like it was in like Williamsburg, but it was the fact that like I just hated dressing up sometimes. I was like, I don't like, I would go into like with my PJ sometimes, and you know, they'd be like, you like wear something nicer, and it's just like I'd be like, oh damn, like sorry. But it's something that like I feel so much comfortable working at home, but also, you know, I think for me, like, I also want to be contributing back to educational systems, especially the low-income Black, Indigenous, people of color systems right there, right? You know, like, offering them free services or how I can help them too, of course. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, pay me, right? It's like, no, I'm doing this because I believe in the community and I understand how hard it is to come from a school that didn't have that much limited resources, and yet you're having to be in higher education in the future and you're constantly struggling to be like, you know, adequate enough or quote unquote smart enough because you were never exposed to it at a younger age. So I hope that like, that hopefully would stem people to be more interested in environmentalism.
Yeah. You mentioned something about wanting to do a postgrad in the near future. Do you have any specific plans for that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I've had a very interest, of course, obviously this is like a long shot, but in the long-term future, it would be very interesting to see if I have an app or some sort. Of course, like, this is just a random brainstorm, but I think that, like, eventually, like, I do want to go to grad school in a certain program with either innovative design or environmental design and/or environmental education. And I think that for me, you know, one of the things actually that was really interesting, like, my mom was an educator in Mexico, and it really made me sad the fact that, like, when she immigrated here, she wasn't able to obviously teach because she was from Mexico and she didn't obviously come here legally. So it really, you know, broke my heart that she literally studied 4 years in college, got her teaching degree, and then immediately moved to the United States. And to me, like, I kind of see it as a way of, like, repaying that back to my mom, is the fact that, like, she wasn't really able to become an educator in that way because of all these, like, obviously racist, you know, systems here and the way that America operates. And I think that's the one way that I can actually give back. So that's something that I do want to be exploring. But of course, I understand too, being an educator is very hard and it's very draining. And honestly, educators need to be praised more than, you know, other things out there, other people, right? Like, they are the ones to be part of the frontline communities who are, like, risking themselves and their mental and physical health.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your sister being vegan,
mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if I guess the rest of your family or the close people around you are also quite involved with sustainability and those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think for me, like, my sister's always been vegan, but the funny thing is that, like, she was, like, a plastic straw person and plastic cups person, and actually, it was a hard conversation, but we had a very argument about, like, why she was using plastic, and It was so draining to talk to my sister, of course. But eventually she realized this year, she's like, you know what? I really want to become more sustainable. You inspired me.
Mm-hmm.
And just those changes. And I think for my dad, like, of course, he still eats meat. And my mom mainly meets more plant-based. But my brother himself, too, like, he's a, like, meat eater. But my boyfriend himself, he actually has been a vegetarian for, like, I think 14 years of his life. He went, like, back in, like, middle school. So it's really awesome that, like, he's been vegetarian. I've been actually trying to convince him to go vegan.
Uh-huh.
But it's hard because it's, like, you know, of course I do love him and, like, I do respect him too. But also it's, like, it'd be nice. But it's something that obviously, like, will make it or break you for me in a relationship, right? Whereas others are like, no, I need to date someone who's completely vegan. For me, it's like, I can settle if you're, like, vegetarian, you know, it's fine.
It will do. Uh-huh. Your boyfriend, is he a lot more engaged with environmental issues because of you? Or was he always interested in those kind of things as well?
Yeah, I think he has. Like, he definitely has in the sense of, like, yes, he did it because he saw those animal agricultural videos at a young age. That's why he went vegetarian. But I think in terms of our environmental values, like, he's actually learned so much more from me. He's like, wow, I never knew that. He's actually was focused in urban planning. So he kind of did, like, a lot of research, obviously, like, gentrification. He understood all those policies and just understanding landscapes and stuff like that. And that's something that, of course, I never took an urban planning course, which is something I regret so much that I could have in college. And instead, I was just taking all these heavy math and science courses that I was so bad at. Like, I was so horrible. I would get C minus. Like, I barely passed the course. And I was just like, wow, like, I can't believe I passed that. But it never made any sense to me. But I think that, like, you know, he's taught me a lot of things in that sense of, like, urbanism and learning that. And I think it has also opened my mind of, like, learning different sectors of the environmental movement, because urban planning, of course, is part of it too. And, like, gentrification and, like, systematic land zoning or housing zone properties and stuff like that. So for me, I was like, wow, I need to learn more about this. So he definitely has inspired me on that end.
Yeah, I definitely feel like any subject you do has some kind of relevance to the environment.
Yeah, some people are always like, how do you, like, are you able to link certain things? Like, I actually would tell you this now. I'm planning to do a post with someone about the bottling industry and it being sustainable, and also if producing movie sets, are they sustainable or green?
Yeah.
So it's something that, like, a lot of people are like, where do you get these ideas? But it's like, oh, well, I kind of worked in one too, so it was kind of draining. But yeah, like, I think a lot of things, if we just reconnect those dots to the environment, it would make sense.
Yeah, I think everything is just somehow connected to the environment.
Yeah.
Which is nice, because then there's so much more you can talk about as well. Mm-hmm. Like, so much more information you can bring. Do you have any particular, like, college classes you would suggest taking for someone who is interested in, like, the environment and everything related to the environment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like it depends on the school you go to, right? There's so many programs out there, which is awesome. But I do think that, like, definitely get your hands or your toes dipped in so many variety of subjects, right? I took an environmental justice course and it was taught by a white male professor. And I honestly, like, did not learn anything. I was like, this is useless, and also to the fact that like my grad student, the one who was teaching the class, the teacher's assistant, they call them, she worked at the Environmental Protection Agency, and like even when she was talking, I was like, this is the reason why Black Indigenous people of color are confused by the Environmental Protection Agency, because this is confusing, and the way you guys explain these things are confusing. But also the fact, you know, thank you for telling me that the EPA is also corrupt, because she had quit that job for certain reasons. So I was like, of course I knew it. So I think that like, I think definitely get your hands into like environmental justice and like different types of like agricultural courses. Oh my God, like I really wanted them to have like a sustainable fashion or like fashion design courses. I honestly was so interested, but they never had it. And they have them in New York in Parsons School of Design, which I've always been interested in trying to take, but I'm like, I don't want to really be in school again right now. Also, like, it would be hard. But I think that, like, yeah, like, definitely expand your knowledge and, like, continuously doing that. And I think hopefully, too, like, I'm in the process of developing lesson plans for certain courses on certain topics, like beginner courses on Zoom. So hopefully I, like, I'm going to announce that in the next month or so. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that, because it's going to be on certain topics, and the classes are free and like they'll be taught by me. So I'm hoping that people would be engaged in trying to visit this intro course.
So exciting to get some insider information.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself ever branching out to say YouTube or I don't know, Coursera, Skillshare, those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I had an old YouTube channel last year. So I had braces again twice, and I had double jaw surgery. Uh-huh. So they broke my upper and lower jaw. And I was on a liquid diet for 4 months. And you imagine, like, I lost so much, like, it was so bad. I lost so much weight. I was so weak. And like, it was so bad. I was like malnourished, honestly. Like, it was so bad for me. But it was such a traumatic process. But I think for me, like, I was recording YouTube videos on there. You can actually, if you Google my name on YouTube, it says Isaias Hernandez Braces. It'll show up all my videos from last year about my journey to braces, recording it each month. And they were the first time I was like practicing editing and recording. So I do think that I'm going to be coming back to YouTube in the next month or two. So I do want to really revamp everything I've done in the past. So just like learning from all those editing and like ways I would rank on YouTube to do that and come on YouTube. I'm hoping that people would receive it well.
Yeah,
on my followers. So. But I do want to focus first. I didn't want to like create my YouTube channel and be like, everyone follow me, when it's like I only have like 7,000 followers.
No, I think you have a community that will support you for sure. And I'll definitely put those braces videos in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll send them to you. Like, they're pretty funny. People are like, why did you do this? And I'm like, it was
That's
just
so funny.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, okay, I feel like I have so many questions, I could talk to you forever, but so I'm just gonna ask you one last question.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be, what advice would you give to people wanting to begin a sustainable journey or become more involved with the sustainability movement? And if you could suggest some resources that have inspired you, that would be lovely.
Yeah, definitely. I think that like you should never be afraid of like, you know, creating your own page, right? I think a lot of people sometimes are like, oh, it already exists, I don't want to do it. And like for me, like I'm not the gatekeeper of environmental education. I've always told people, like, please do not hold me to a certain pedestal. Please do not ever think that like if I come up with a term that like obviously like I was never the one who coined it. I usually explain that. And two, like, of course these are my own thoughts. So of course, like, do quote me if you're going to use my thoughts, but if you're not, like, it's fine. You have every agency to talk about any environmental term you want, right? I think there's always this thing where people are like, oh no, like, they're doing this, so I don't want to copy them. And it's like, you're not necessarily copying them. You are copying them if you like obviously straight up like copy and paste, but if you're like, you're always like, you know, I'm always inspired by certain pages, like my best friend Brown Girl Green. I think, have you seen her yet? Or she's like,
yeah, I have.
Yeah, so she's actually my old housemate, and like we went to college together.
Oh, that's
yeah.
So, cool.
So like they call us a duo on there, because like we obviously are constant communication with each other.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you guys met through Instagram or if you'd known each other before. I just noticed that you were doing a lot of collaboration.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So we went to college together, and then we would see each other at parties, but we'd just be like, oh, hi, you know, but then we lived together post-grad, and then like we became like, we're like best friends now. So
oh, that's so
I'm
nice.
Constant communication with her. But Another pages I'd love for you to check out, or I think you've heard of, is at the Slow Factory. I think Celine does an amazing job really talking about circularity, and they really focus on open education and like environmental justice within the sustainable fashion sector. They're such an amazing page. Like, please support them. I think that other pages like Alluvia Magazine is so awesome. And there's also other pages like, you know, like Our Climate Voices. They're doing really great environmental narratives or storytelling. Like, do check them out. And I think that your page is awesome too. You gotta check your unique designs on there. I see you. So don't think that like I don't see the little cutesy or aesthetic place of like what you do. Cause I see your place and your designs of your products or your things. And I'm like, what? I wish I had a plate that looked like your the plate that you had the other day on your Instagram. I was like, I wish I had a plate that looked like that. Like, mine just looked not good.
But yeah, no, I just want to echo what you said about social media and like creating your own page and not worrying about people having done stuff before. Because first of all, like having more of this content is so important. The more I see it, the more I'm like encouraged to engage in it as well. And secondly, you get to meet so many cool people. Like, I wouldn't be talking to you right now if I didn't have my Instagram account, and that would be a shame. So really grateful for that.
I know, I'm so, yeah, I'm like so happy too that I found you, because I was like, oh my god, like a vegan in Hong Kong, that's so awesome. I actually was like working with like this one company that's also in Hong Kong for a giveaway. So it was so awesome to see that, like, I'm just meeting so many people throughout the world that I would never think of, right, as a normal person, right? Exactly. But I think social media has that power to connect each other. And like, I feel like I'm also thankful for you, of course, like all the OG people who were there in the beginning of my page. And then like, people were just like randomly like just I started like quote unquote blowing up, but like people were like, I remember when you had like 40 followers, like one of my first followers, and I was like,
I was there.
I was like, you already know I love you. Like, you'll never be unfollowed. You're the real one. Even though you don't talk about environmentalism. Yeah, I'm like, there's some people who don't even talk about it. They're interested in it. But those were the original ones that I'm like, these are the real people who were there for me. Like, you know.
Yeah, no, I'll always be proud to be an OG follower of Career Bound Vegan. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to rate and review the show. It makes a huge difference in helping me get the word of the podcast out. Also, don't forget to subscribe and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Thank you again for listening, and thank you, Isaias, for your time, and I'll see you next Monday.